Okay, welcome back. This is the Bless You Boys podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Day, and with me is my co-host, Ashley McLennan. Ashley, how's it going?
Not bad. For total fairness to our listeners last week who could not listen to anything, it was because I was crying. We had to cancel the podcast recording last Tuesday because my job made me cry. I am 35 years old, and I do not mind admitting to you, I definitely cried at work. It was after leaving work.
Held it together until afterward, you know.
Until I got to my car and then wept for 20 straight minutes.
Man.
It was disgusting. And was not in much shape to record a podcast. This week has been much better. I'm having jokes. I'm having them. I'm not making them, clearly. But
yeah. You haven't murdered your bosses, so that's good.
Nobody's been murdered. Things have been going pretty well.
That's good. And, you know, we keep creeping closer to progress here. We had Truck Day go down, which was always kind of cute.
All my teams are covering all of their trucks, although the Rays had to go, I think, all of 60 miles.
Yeah, that's true. Someone suggested on Twitter today that they should turn it into this kind of like, you know, like Death Race 2000 kind of all the trucks have to race to spring training. But yeah, the problem is the Rays are just roll in. No problem.
They're already there. It's fun. I love Truck Day. Truck Day is like a weird, warm place in my heart where even though it's very, very cold here, it's like, okay, pause is there. They're packing up the truck. I can finally kind of see the end of winter, and that is a very good feeling.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, it's just kind of a nice little symbol that we're really like just over a week away at this point, which is pretty great. That feels good. Yeah,
pitchers or catchers report on the 12th, so we're very close now.
Yep. Oh, exactly a week.
Yeah. We won't get to see any actual activity for a little over a week, but it'll be good. I mean, we're almost there.
Yeah, at least there'll be, you know, the beat writers will have more interviews, there'll be little interview clips and, you know, little like how was your off season type features and all that. And yeah, that's the kind of content we need to get us the rest of the way. So
we'll see how it goes. Rob is literally working right now.
Oh no.
Our intrepid leader is writing posts about new rule suggestions from Manfred.
Oh Lord. Well, that's all right. Rob needs to get back to work because he was gone for almost 2 weeks in the Caribbean, and I'm still jealous. So,
yeah, he was sending us all sorts of mocking photos and really unacceptable.
Yeah, like, oh, I'm not coming back, guys. You know, these painkillers they have down here, like, this is the greatest thing ever. I'm just staying. And I can't really blame him, having been there a few times myself. The Caribbean is pretty fantastic.
I've never been. I get to go to Florida in like 2 weeks, so that's close enough.
Oh, that's true. You are going to spring training a little bit, aren't you?
Kind of. So the thing is, I will be in proximity to spring training, but I will not actually be attending spring training.
Oh, you're not
going to
go at all? Okay.
No, I'm going to a book convention in Daytona Beach, and Daytona Beach is just far enough from everything that it is impossible for me to go to any of the games just because they're all afternoon games. The real kicker of that is that I will be in Orlando when the Tigers are playing the Braves at Disney, but I will be at Universal Studios. So
this is not a baseball trip. That's okay.
No, it's kind of sad. I will get to go to I think we're going to stop by the friend I'm going with. She isn't a real big baseball fan. It's more like it's her birthday, so we're going to go do Universal, and then I have like writerly duties to attend to at the book convention. But there is a minor league park right by us, like literally right across the street from where we're staying. I think it's like a Jackie Robinson. Hold on. I will tell you. It is. Oh my God. Daytona Beach, Jackie Robinson Ballpark is the home of the Daytona Tortugas.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And apparently they have a pretty cool, I should have known that too. I know they're one of my like rando teams that I love the name of, because it's Turtles. Anyway,
I knew that one, but I was thinking Orlando. I was like, I don't know if there's a team there.
Yeah, no, there is. So the Daytona Tortugas play at Jackie Robinson Ballpark, which is literally right across the water, like a strait. I don't know how to define bodies of water. I'm on the beach, which is kind of an island, but not. And Florida's weird. So, but it'll be fun, I think. So
there we're going to stop. Body of water lurking anywhere in Florida. Yeah.
Maybe stop and get myself a Tortugas cap of some kind and see what's up.
Yeah, they actually have. Yeah, they have kind of a cool logo. Their stuff looks all right. Let's say, well, the Tigers though have at least made a little move in the hat game by giving us all something to make childish jokes about and reducing back the size of the truck station D to normal size.
Oh, God, please know how much restraint I used in not making 1,000 Big D jokes when I had to write that column.
I know, you know, they just write themselves. Like, you almost can't help yourself. Almost, you know, you can make a joke without trying.
Yeah, and then it reminds me, because I work in facility management in my life, and at one point we had to switch from having, like, bagged nuts.
Oh, Lord.
Like big.
Here we go.
We had to switch from having big bags of mixed nuts to individual size bags of nuts. And the amount of work it took to not include the phrase handling the nuts in my email to staff about this truly tested all of my restraint.
Yeah, we're still children. Still children at heart.
Yeah, so yeah, the Tigers listened to fans about one whole thing and are reducing the size of the giant D on the cap, but the jersey D will remain, excuse me, the same as the cap D. They're not switching back to the alternating Ds, which makes me sad because that's kind of one of those fun things that you can kind of like point out when you're a Tigers fan to new fans or people who don't know. You can kind of like give them an elbow and be like, hey, did you know the Ds are different? And I really liked that.
Yeah.
So it kind of makes me sad that they're not switching that back, but I guess we'll settle for a smaller D.
Yeah, I guess we'll have to. And and the other thing about that is, you know, too, like these things seem to change so much now. Like everybody's so into the, you know, the alternate jerseys, the, you know, the just random kind of, you know, jerseys for different events, all that stuff, like the Veterans Day jersey. Like there's just a million of them. So there's plenty of opportunities for the Tigers to try and do something a little different. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're all very orange.
Yeah, very orange. Yeah, we've talked about this before. Like, if I'm not mistaken, you're on the side of no more orange, or at least very little, right?
I liked that really bright orange when it first came out. I think, I can't remember if it was spring training or the original Players Weekend where they really went in on that bright orange. I love the Tiger logo that is on the spring training caps, like that really highly stylized tiger. I think it looks so good. And I would love to see that incorporated more into a million other things. I really like the navy version with that tiger, but I could stop seeing all that orange anytime now. If you're a hunter, go to town. It's going to be a really great multi-purpose cap to purchase.
Well, there's so many colors.
Gonna shoot you.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's so many. There's brown ones. You can get the white one. You know, there really are, like, still just a million options out there. But, yeah, I mean, I don't like that much orange in their uniforms. I really like that navy jersey combination. Like, that to me looks pretty good. I'd like to see the away uniform look more like that. But, you know, they don't like bold colors, you know, from anybody in their away jersey. So we're probably not ever going to get that. You got to go that off-white.
Yeah, I guess I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, it's just hats in the end.
I mean, really, it's not. I mean, we make a big deal out of it because we're desperate for any kind of news to report. But yeah, it's really whatever. I didn't even know if I paid much attention to the size difference in the tees.
Yep. Yeah, you know, like some of the news that's come out, you know, in the last week or two since we've been on. I mean, it really hasn't even really revolved that much around the team. We had, you know, Kirk Gibson being hired as a special assistant to Al Avila, which, you know, like he kind of has been anyway for years. Like he's taught base running and spring training, and you know, I'm sure they've asked him his opinion about various young players and all that sort of thing all along. So it's just sort of like formalizing the arrangement, I suppose. But that seems to indicate, you know, Mr. Gibson will still be around for a long time to come as far as working in the Tigers organization, and obviously still doing the color work for the broadcast. So he'll still be I don't know, filling the airwaves with like bizarre non sequiturs and like weird jokes and and spectacular insight at the same time. Like he manages to do all these things. So yeah, he's been fun. And then what was the other thing? Oh yeah, Denny McLean. Yeah, the fact that Denny McLean's what was it? It's 1969.
He's selling his 69 Cy Young, and he isn't even selling it. I'm assuming somebody got it from him in some kind of, I don't know, yard sale. Total supposition, but somebody legally acquired it from him, and they are the ones auctioning it off. And I think last time I checked, it was over $8,000, and that was well over a week ago. He's auctioning off his 1969 Cy Young. So not quite as, you know, part of the Tigers lore as his 68 one, which is, I mean, of course he deserved that 68 one. Like, what a season. So it's interesting. So if you have, you know, $10,000+ and want a Cy Young of your very own, you too can have one.
Yep. It's just such a weird thing to see for sale or to like contemplate buying. Like, I'm not a sports memorabilia collector, so obviously for people like that, like, I'm sure this thing is like, you know, like gold, like just doesn't come along that often, but it would just be such a weird item to have purchased and like have in your house somewhere.
You know what my weird thing that I want to have in my house is, and I keep looking at them on eBay and I haven't bit the bullet just because shipping to Canada is either impossible or insane. I want old Tiger Stadium seats.
Oh yeah. Do those still get sold?
You can still get them. Usually they go for about $800 for two. Which I mean, isn't really that crazy when you think about it. And you can get like the newer ones when they're replacing out the plastic ones, but I want like those old vintage, like wood looking ones.
Oh yeah.
Cause I have a pen that's inset with wood from old Tiger Stadium seats, because I'm a fucking nerd. That pen cost me like $80. So,
oh, no.
$800 to get an actual pair of the seats. I would love that. I just bought a house last year, and I'm slowly decorating it. But yeah, that would be really rad. That's where I would spend some ridiculous money.
Would you have those seats like outside, like on the deck or something in the summer?
No, I keep them inside. Oh my God, are you kidding me? Okay. No. I like how I'm like aghast at the idea of exposing outdoor stadium seating to the elements. <Yep. laughs> I realize in processing that it's ludicrous and they sat outside for many years, but no, I would keep them inside. By the way, the Cy Young Award is sold and it sold for $17,118.
Oh, nice. Well, that's a pretty good haul.
Yikes.
I don't know what that dude paid for it, but...
Yeah, right? I'm hoping he got a good return on his investment. Oh.
Yeah. I think we're all caught up with Tigers news. No. I mean, the only thing that's been going on is that, you know, there's still been some little... You know, everyone's still kind of talking about Nick Castellanos, even though nothing has really particularly happened.
It's the same way it was with Fulmer last year, where everyone's like, oh, the Yankees are going to make an offer we can't refuse. Ooh, when's that Yankees offer going to come in? And honestly, there's no fancy Dodgers offer around the corner with them begging for Nick for, you know, all the good prospects. We're not going to get anything we want, and they're not going to trade him.
Yep.
And then they're not going to extend him, and then I'm just going to be mad about it.
Yep, and I'm just going to hope that they can do the whole qualifying offer scenario and get that pick. I don't know, we'll just have to see, because I mean, nobody takes those offers, and I don't think Nick would, but you just never know the way things are going at the moment.
This free agent market is so weird, but then we have the conflicting thing, right? I don't think we've had a podcast since Al made all his delightful comments, because Nick said he wants to work for a competitor and Al says they're not going to be competitors.
Yeah, like, Nick also, you know, said that he wanted to, you know, he wanted this to happen before spring training. Like, he wanted to know where he was going
to
be.
He wanted to go to a new team. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. But it bugs me that you got your general manager going, no, sorry, we're not even going to try to field a competitive team for the next 3 years.
Yeah.
We're just going to focus on getting prospects, which is a polite way of saying we're going to tank. And that makes me mad. As a fan, that makes me, like, what, the Marlins signed Curtis Granderson to a minor league deal today?
Yep.
You couldn't have done that? Like, Rob made a really valid point in one of our chats, and he was just like, that's a guaranteed seat filler. How do you not just sign Curtis Granderson to a cheap contract? You know, here's a million, and not even a million. He could probably, like, 725 if you get to the majors. Like, yep. Curtis Granderson just obviously just wants to keep playing.
Yeah.
Like, bring him home.
Yep. And if Nick, you know, if Nick was traded, they probably would do, you know, they would consider something like that just for fun. But with Nick slotted in at right field, and you've got like guys like Jacob Robson, and then maybe, you know, Mr. Cameron coming later in the year. You know, they just don't have room for that. And it's just another one of those examples of how we're just kind of in this awful kind of between the market place where the Tigers just always seem to be on the wrong side of things. Like when the Tigers were buying prospects, you know, prospects were getting traded, you know, for, you know, good players. And now that we're trying to do it, they're not. And when the Tigers were trying to win, free agent contracts were getting more and more expensive. And now that the Tigers are not trying to win, all of a sudden some of these guys are a good deal cheaper than they would have been a few years ago. And yet we can't take advantage of that either because we're trying to just, you know, tank it out here for another year or two. So, yeah, it's just an infuriating spot that we're in, like having kind of been at the bad side of both trends over the past 6 or 7 years.
Can't really do anything right.
Yep. I mean, you know, some of it's just circumstances, but yeah, it is frustrating to be there. You know, we did have some people commenting, you know, really worried that, like, does this mean that, you know, Nick's going to be disgruntled all year or, you know, isn't going to play his best? And I think the opposite is probably true, that Nick is going to do everything humanly possible to play his way off the Tigers as soon as he can.
Yeah, Nick's going to be auditioning basically every single game. The same way we look at guys in September when the games don't matter anymore, but you're like, these guys are fighting for a chance to be on the team next year. He's basically going to be fighting for a chance to be on any other team. And like, he's going to be auditioning to show everybody else what he's got. Plus, knowing how Nick is in that clubhouse and knowing what a player's player he is not the guy to go out on a field and be like, no, you know what? They didn't trade me. They didn't give me the extension I want. They didn't do blah, blah, blah. So I'm just going to half-ass it. Nick is not a half-ass it kind of guy. I've definitely called him out on his actual skills in the field, but like, he's not a guy to go out there and take it out on the team because he's not happy with his contract situation. He's not like that kind of dude.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I have zero concerns about Nick on that front. I don't know if he even needs any motivation, but if this does anything to him, it's only just going to make him, you know, work even harder, you know, to kind of prove himself and to play better right field and kind of look like, hopefully, you know, a guy that a team will be in a position where they really need that bat sometime in July. I mean, obviously we ran into this with JD Martinez 2 years ago where similar player, you know, Nick's not as good a hitter as JD, but they're both subpar fielders that no one really wants out in the outfield all that often. And so we, you know, no matter what Nick does, we may be just kind of running down the same road here again. But at least if he has a good first half, there's the opportunity that a team will kind of look at him and be like, all right, we really need that bat one way or the other. We'll actually give you something. Because otherwise, there still isn't much point trading him. There just isn't much point trading him other than for Chris Illich to save money, unless you're getting, you know, a 50-grade prospect, like at least a borderline top 100 guy. And, yep, it just doesn't seem like anyone is offering anything close to that right now. So,
well, especially when you've got all these free agents just out there.
Yep, you could sign. Yep, you could sign.
Oh, it's going to be so weird, the one-year deals that are going to get signed in the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, yep. I know, and we were kind of even waiting for that, like, 2 weeks ago. Like, well, we're at that point, you know, people are just going to start signing. But nope, we are not at that point yet. Everyone's still kind of trying to hang in there and wait for the big deals to start happening. Really, the only kind of notable move this week was that it feels like the Houston Astros moved on from Dallas Keuchel. Like, if there was still some conversation going on with him, I think them picking up Wade Miley kind of ends all that. You know, they've kind of got their lefty starter, ground ball getter, you know, kind of innings eating type starter. I still don't know if I think the Astros are good enough compared to where their rotation was last year or the year prior. I think losing Charlie Morton is probably going to hurt them, and they haven't really done much to replace that. And they don't have Lance McCullers this year, so
they're going to have some problems. Keuchel's going to sign somewhere else.
Yeah,
eventually, maybe.
Yeah, at some point. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of teams where he still seems like he'd be a pretty good fit. Like, I still feel like the Angels, like, I just don't understand, you know, the Angels keep kind of making moves like, you know, we're trying to piece together this pitching staff and trying to support Trout. And it's just like, but you're not even getting close. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe they finally bite the bullet and just realize, like, well, we're going to have to throw some more money at this problem. Otherwise, we're going to waste another 2 years of Mike Trout here. So maybe there's a home for him there or elsewhere. We'll see.
I'm sorry. The free agent market just has me so beat down, and oh, I'm not even in it. Like, I don't even know where to pin the blame, right? Like, I read it, and I read all of the stuff about it, and I think, oh, are the teams being greedy? But then part of me is like, no, the teams are just learning how to properly value the years of, like, usable labor that they're going to get out of this. And then I'm like, oh my god, Ashley, did you just refer to these young players as usable labor? And then I get so mad at myself, and then also I'm like, no, but she's got a point. And this is the problem about being an empathetic person, is that you see the sides of everything.
Sure, yeah.
So you can, like, kind of balance everything out, and it becomes so problematic because I really do have a hard time, like, really assigning blame here. You know what I
mean?
Like, you know, that's fine. I mean, a lot of people have very strong opinions about this, but I feel like there may be wrong on both sides. And there may be right on both sides.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's wrong on the player side just from the fact that they really just didn't see the way the rules were set were coming with the last CBA, and even the one before that, how those rules were undermining free agency and really kind of creating a lot of incentives to be bad unless you were going to be really good. And I think fundamentally that's the problem, is that a lot of this is just, you know, the owners got rules in place to sort of, you know, to sort of set themselves up to where, okay, you know, there's no reason to spend a ton of money unless you're already ready. And there's a lot of reason to be bad. There's a lot of kind of benefit to being bad, from revenue sharing to a whole host of things. And once that's in play, like once those changes happen, then the owners are just kind of responding, you know, fairly rationally to the new market, to the way the system is working now. And it's pretty hard to look at it and say, like, oh, well, you know, this team's being cheap when all the other teams are kind of doing the same type thing. Like, you can't expect one group to, like, take a moral stance and just, like, start giving away $40 million contracts when no one else really wants to do that. But as a group, they definitely seem to have kind of found their limit as far as spending goes. And, I mean, it's not like there was ever a rule that the players should get 50% of the profit. Like, that split should be, it was never enshrined in law, but that was sort of the agreement after the strike. And it really held sway until, like, about 3 or 4 years ago when it really started to kind of diverge from that. So, yeah, I mean, the whole thing is just kind of aggravating and probably isn't going to be dealt with for a couple years. And it's also, I mean, to some degree, I mean, I think it can be overblown. I mean, it's not like Bryce Harper and Manny Machado are going to get, like, you know, 5-year, $100 million contracts. Like, in the end, they're probably not going to come in that far from where people expected. I've already seen people, like, posting charts, you know, trying to make their point on Twitter where they show, like, oh, well, spending is way down, you know, last year, and it's even further down this year. Well, but
yeah,
like,
but profits are the highest they've ever been. So let's, like, calm down.
Right.
Like,
well, right. Profits for the owners are, but even, like, as far as, like, what they're spending, even though it's declined and it looks terrible this year.
Yeah.
Well, Manny Machado and Bryce Harper haven't signed yet. You know, like, you can't, like, putting that chart in while the two biggest free agents haven't signed yet, still, you know, kind of disingenuous.
Well, and even other guys,
so,
like the Keuchels, they're going to be huge, huge contracts in and of themselves, I think. So, yeah, factoring, you can't really call the season done and look at the numbers now.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
we do now live in a world where Chris Archer is retweeting Bob Nightingale about the free agency market. So,
yeah, you know it's bad. Well, and yeah, I mean, maybe the other part of it that should be kept separate is the timing thing, because I've heard a lot of people trying to figure out, like, well, is there some way that we can kind of have a cutoff to where, you know, players, everybody has to sign by this date where, you know, so that players aren't in this position where if the teams wait long enough, everybody just kind of has to get desperate because their life depends on this. They're going to have to move and pack up their little kids and God knows what else and all move across the country at the drop of a hat. And, you know, and that's just another way that the owners are really disadvantaging the players by just kind of waiting them out like this. And then there's also, you know, there's also the Scott Boras angle where Scott Boras likes to wait everybody out. And the whole thing is just, yeah, it's just really devolved into kind of a clusterfuck. So, and it hasn't been very fun. And I'm sure, like, for a lot of fans out there, they're probably sick of hearing writers write about it. I've had a couple of, hey, you know, stop with the politics, stick to baseball comments lately, to which are easily rebutted by the fact that baseball won't stick to baseball. Baseball is all involved in politics constantly, so there's just no way around it. But I do understand the frustration that this is kind of all there is to talk about, and it really kind of sucks, I think, for the sport in general. Like, a lot of the other sports, like, their off-season has moments that are exciting, like, oh, this is when free agency is, or, you know, they make a bigger deal out of the draft, or all those different things, and you know, basically, we've spent the entire offseason with supposedly smart baseball writers and pundits all talking about how bad all these players are and how they're not worth any money and no one should spend on them. Like, it's, I don't know, there's just something in the whole tone that really undercuts any kind of excitement or enthusiasm enthusiasm about star players. So I don't know, the whole thing's just kind of been a drag. And yeah, I don't know, I'll just be happy for the season to start because I'm kind of sick of talking about that whole side of it, honestly.
Somebody put together the all free agent team. I think it was John Becker put it together. And I think they average, I think, but based on WAR, they were like an 85 win team, which is insane.
Yep, that's a contender right there. You can buy a contender if you want to, and maybe that's it. Maybe there needs to be a startup. There should be a team that just emerges right now. The 31st team, the lurker.
DIY team.
Yeah, exactly. Just get, like, you know, A-Rod or somebody to put this all together. The other, you know, there was a piece on, I think it was the Detroit News today, and they were talking to Nico Goodrum. And that's kind of like one of the interesting kind of battles that'll be coming up to watch this spring training is sort of who's getting the time at second base between Nico Goodrum and Dawel Lugo, because there doesn't appear to be another option coming. But I thought it was pretty interesting because Nico Goodrum had, like, a really good perspective on it. Like, this is my year, you know, this is my chance to, like, improve a little bit defensively, look a little more solid, and just win the job and have it all year, which I thought was the right attitude to have. But we also did have a fan post, you know, suggesting that the Tigers are foisting Dawel Lugo on us and, you know, just trying to push him because, you know, he was the key piece from the JD deal and they don't want to look like they've given up on him. Kind of, how do you see that shaking out? Do you think Nico Goodrum is going to be able to win the job, at least most of the time?
This season, I think so. But we'll see. I mean, I think I might have a blind spot for Nico Goodrum now. Like, he was such a nobody to me at the beginning of last season, and then he really emerged at the end of last season as kind of the guy you want to root for, and I really like him.
Yeah, he seems like a great person. I mean, he does a ton of charity stuff and comes across great. Yep.
Super great dude, and he's not bad. I mean, he was honestly one of the best players on the team last year, based on strictly numbers. I think he had the second highest WRC plus to Nick.
Yeah, like, I think that's right.
I mean, don't quote me on that, but, like, I'm 99% sure I am right about this.
Yeah, I mean, he was an above average hitter. He posted a 103 WRC plus, and I don't think anybody else did, because I know.
No, I think they were the only two over 100. Yep. So, yeah, because Nick was a 130, and he was, yeah, 103, did you say?
Yeah, 103.
Yeah, I mean, that's an above-average hitter by, you know, 3%, but whatever.
Yeah, 16 home runs, you know, 16 home runs and 12 stolen bases, like, for a position that doesn't necessarily, you know, get a ton of offensive production out of it, that's pretty good. You take that. I mean, if you got Ian Kinsler's defense with that, you'd be perfectly happy. Be like, yep, lock that guy up for 4 or 5
years. And I mean, I don't think that he has Ian Kinsler's defense, but...
No, he does not.
We're not going to get that lucky. But I don't think... What was his... Hold on. I'm going to be really mad
if
I don't
have the number. Well, his DRS was 0 at second base.
Okay, thank you. That's all I needed.
Yep, I'm looking at it. So the DRS was zero. The Uzi R was like -5. So maybe a little below average, but not bad. Like,
I was kind of getting pushed around different locations. Yeah. I'm not mad at that. That's something that you can see an improvement on over a season. I'd be happy to have him at like a 0 or a 1, honestly, like fully replacement level at those roles, just not a liability. Yeah. And to have him maybe improve his bat a little from last year and give me like a, 108 to 110.
Yep, just a little more.
Like, I feel like there's a really good player in there. And not like, really good like a JD Martinez, but like really good by the standards of the team that we're putting together. Yeah. And a guy that you want to root for, a guy that, I don't know, God forbid, might actually have a jersey or two out in the crowd. You know, he's fun and he's a likable guy. And he obviously really like focused on immersing himself into that, Detroit and Michigan lifestyle. I think he said he like stayed around and like lived in the neighborhoods and like really immersed himself in it. And that's a respectable dude. And I kind of want to cheer for that.
Yeah. Exactly. Yep. I mean, I definitely want to root for him, and I definitely want the Tigers to give him like 650 at bats. Like, I want him to play full time.
Yeah.
It's fine if they want to shift him to first a little bit or whatever. But I mean, that defense is fine. It's not great, but it's fine. And so I would just turn him loose at second base myself and let it go. Dowell Lugo, I mean, for me, like you just stick him at AAA again and see if he can figure something out with his bat, because if he's got the power. And he's got the ability to get the bat on the ball and not strike out that much, but he was just a ground ball machine all last year and doesn't play particularly good defense, and that just doesn't get it done at the major league level. So yeah, I would let him season for a little bit longer and see how things play out over the course of the year.
Yeah, I'm all for it. I think that's a great way to do it.
Yep. So too. The other position, we've kind of come down, like I wouldn't have minded the Tigers signing a reliever. Maybe they'll still pick up a little bit more depth or something, but they signed, they picked up Garrett Reed, or is it Reed Garrett? Oh my God, I'm confused.
In the Rule 5, forgot about that signing. Yeah,
so. In the Rule 5 draft. So they've got him. They added Jose Fernandez, who's a pretty hard-throwing lefty, who had been in the Blue Jays organization on a minor league deal with an invite, I believe, to spring training. So they've picked up a couple bullpen arms, and they let Alex Wilson go, which I kind of understand because you want to start trying the younger guys who have more upside. No one seemed to want to trade for Alex Wilson, so there just wasn't that much point keeping him around. But the other position beyond second base is catcher. And I think both of us would agree this is the position where we're kind of like just kind of disgusted a little bit at what the Tigers appear to not be doing. They keep adding, minor league catching depth. They've picked up a couple veterans to stash. But that's about it. And,
you got to do something there. I mean, I know you're not contending, but Grayson Griner is not a starting catcher yet. I mean, he played in all of 30 games last year.
We don't see that many, starting catchers anymore. It's like, even the best guys catch like 80, 90 games, barely more than half.
You need a backup guy, and I don't think you can rely on Hicks. And I don't know that they're ready to push Rodgers as high that and fast as that would require. I see more of a September, like you talked about. And I think in the meantime, you need a guy that can pick up 40 or 50 games in that mix. So.
Yep. And as you wrote this week, I mean, there's still people available. I mean, we've talked about Matt Wieters and Martin Maldonado, but there's even like a cheaper kind of fallback option, which would maybe give you a little bit of a bat kind of to put into the mix, which is Steven Vogt, would be a perfectly acceptable idea. I mean, I really just want someone who's a veteran who is used to handling the staff rather than like, well, we're just going to go with a rookie and a guy who isn't really a catcher. Because if John Hicks was really a catcher, actually, John Hicks like receiving numbers and some, his throwing numbers aren't that good, but a lot of his other numbers defensively are pretty strong. And John Hicks is a lot better hitter than say your average major league catcher, or at least a lot of them, a lot of the backups. So you would think that, if they thought he could catch, he would already be penciled in for 80 games last year. And they didn't do that. So it doesn't feel like anybody really believes in John Hicks as a catcher. And yet we're going to go with him anyway, and apparently have him catch 80 games for us this year, which I don't understand. Because this is the one position, if your second baseman's bad, all that means is that your second baseman is bad. But when your catcher is bad, it means your pitchers are worse. And it just devalues kind of everyone around them. And that's why that position just should not be trifled with like this.
Well, and especially with the young pitching staff, you can't mess around. Like, there are guys that are going to be coming up from the AAA level, and you got Daniel Norris coming back, hopefully, to pitch a full healthy season. Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
And, like, you just can't.
I believe.
You can't half-ass a catcher in that position. You can't lean so hard on a young guy like Griner. Like, he could be amazing, and I don't know that because I haven't had an opportunity to see it, and neither has anybody at a management level in the Tigers. Like,
yeah, not against major league pitching. It's just a whole different ballgame, and it's not like he did so much in the minor leagues to be like, okay, we trust this guy's going to figure it out, you know, sooner or later.
It's not like he did anything at the major leagues to dazzle in those 30 games. He was tall, and he was fine.
Yeah, he's a pretty good catcher behind the plate, and that's kind of about it, and he might not hit at all. Meanwhile, John Hicks, I think, had like a 103 WRC plus last year and a 95 WRC plus the year before. So he's basically got a full season of at-bats that says he's at least a league average hitter. So if, you know, and the average major league catcher, and I know this because I looked it up for someone today, is I think it was 83 WRC plus was the league average for catchers last year. So if you've got an above average hitting catcher who's not a disaster defensively, like why isn't he the catcher? But it just seems like, yeah, nobody really believes he's the catcher. And so what are we doing here? What are we doing?
Yeah, you just, for the love of God, sign me a veteran catcher, and I will not complain about the Tigers in the free agency market until next year. That's all I want.
Exactly.
Just give me a catcher.
I think we're all resigned to the fact that, you know, unless like a bunch of things go right, the Tigers are probably going to be one of the five worst teams in baseball again. They're going to pick fifth in the draft this year. We can probably look forward to having a pick about that high or higher again in the 2020 draft. And, you know, at that point, like, your fucking tanking should be done.
For real.
Yeah. That'll be four, you know, top 10 picks in 5 years. And we had the number one pick at least once. So it's like, yeah, you know, how much longer is this going to go? As long as Chris Illich says it is, I guess. But yeah, you know, I look at John Hicks' defensive numbers on Baseball Prospectus, and they're a little below average. They're not terribly good, but yeah, not a debacle either. But you know, you combine like he's almost 30, he had hip surgery, and he's never proven himself to really be even an average major league defensive catcher. And I just don't see giving that guy 90, 80, 70 games, whatever it is.
Yeah, well, especially since he's going to be kind of used platoon style with Miggy at first. Like, just get a designated backup catcher. Oh, my God.
Yep. Yeah, and then you've got Hicks in there as your third catcher, which is every old school manager's dream because they don't have to worry about pinch hitting for their catcher.
Yeah, absolutely.
They still got a spare. Guardy can just go wild. Wild pinch hitting for Griner.
Like, that's what we had going last year. It was just a gem situation. Ugh.
Yep. Yeah, and it kind of brings up another thing I wanted to talk about, which is basically like how long do you give, you know, prospects? Because we're heading into year like four and change since the deals that brought Daniel Norris, Michael Fulmer, and Matt Boyd here. And I think it's pretty instructive, and like fans who are kind of like over those guys and like, well, you know, it didn't work out with them, need to remember that Daniel Norris and Michael Fulmer are 25 and that the odds say that their best years are still ahead of them. And, you know, the Tigers apparently are kind of giving up on this group, but it kind of speaks to how long we might have to wait for Casey Mize, Matt Manning, etc. to all kind of get here and figure it out. Like, it's one thing to get to the show and show that you're good enough to pitch in the major leagues, because we know Fulmer, Boyd, and Norris are all plenty good enough to be good major league pitchers. But to establish yourself and stay healthy as a pitcher in the major leagues is just very difficult. And every year we see guys like, you know, like Patrick Corbin was last year, or Nathan Eovaldi, who've, you know, had nothing but injury trouble and then finally just kind of have it all click for him at the same time. And both of those guys got huge contracts compared to what anyone would have expected. So, yeah, I don't know. I wonder if people aren't starting to give up on them too soon. I'm still not real happy with Matt Moore kind of saying that the Tigers had told him there'd be a starting spot for him. I mean, I assume that's a competition, but and that's just kind of like how he wanted to phrase it. But that still kind of worries me. But it also points out that the next wave, whenever we're lucky enough to see it next year, 2021, like those guys aren't going to be ready to carry the team, which is why we keep advocating for building some structure around them so that they can help rather than having the whole burden of, okay, now we're going to try to contend, just put on them when they're, you know, in their early to mid 20s. So
yeah,
I don't know. We're going to have to see how it goes. You know, you take a retrospective look at those three players and the Yoenis Cespedes and David Price deals, and those, they were all better prospects than basically anybody we have except for Casey Mize. I'll leave Matt Boyd out of that because he was undervalued as a prospect, but has actually turned out to be the more durable of the three. But yeah, you just never know. You don't know with prospects. And
Man, I hope Casey Mize actually works out. I feel reasonably
confident.
I do too. Like the hype is there, but not in, like, he's not like valued as a number one in all of the top hundreds. Like, but he's there, and I really want to get excited about him.
Yeah, I mean, somebody had him as high as 16th on the recent top 100 list, and I can't remember who it was.
It wasn't Keith Law, but he was pretty high up on Keith Law's list.
Yeah, he was in there as well. And maybe that's a good way to just move into talking about Keith Law's kind of ranking of the Tigers farm system, because he had us 18th, which kind of freaked some people out. He had Casey Mize, Matt Manning, and Daz Cameron all in the top 100. So the Tigers had more top 100 prospects than most teams. I think maybe there were five or six teams that had more than that. But he still had us 18th, which is a pretty grim look at the, you know, the depth beyond the top couple guys. And you talked to him briefly, but I don't know. It's just kind of hard to figure. It's kind of hard to figure out how we ended up 18th. But it was kind of sobering to see that there are still at least some prospect writers who really kind of look at the Tiger system and think we haven't really gotten very far at all just yet. We're pretty close.
Where did he rank the team last year?
I don't know, but it had to be pretty far down.
Yeah, so I mean, I think we got to look at it like that. Hold on, I'm going to look it up because I can, because it's on ESPN and I have that ability.
Yeah, see, I don't have ESPN Insider, so.
Oh no, I don't have it on this computer. Hold on. Oh, I do. No, I don't. Hold on. Let me sign in. How does the internet work? What did I click on? Oh, I'm a 900-year-old woman. Oh, no, I don't have it on this computer. No!
That's all right. I mean, that's fine. We know it wasn't very good, and I know he didn't have Matt Manning on the list, because I gave him a bunch of grief about that, and he came back telling me, well, I haven't seen the same things, you know, you say you've seen and whatnot. And, you know, on that score, I proved to be 100% right.
Anyway. Take that, Keith Law. But no, I think the baseball internet loves to like shit on Keith Law when his lists come out. But I do think that there is absolutely a method to the Keith Law madness. And while it may not like align with some of the other lists, I think that he has a way of doing things that whether you love or hate it, he's not ever like 100% wrong. And sometimes I think he's actually really right, which I find an interesting balance. Anyway, I think.
Yeah, and grading prospects is still kind of a crapshoot. Like, other than like the top 5 or 10 guys, like, people are wrong all the time. So there's no reason to kind of fly off the handle. But we really are seeing like some wild swings where some people kind of have the Tigers looking like they're, you know, maybe just outside of that first group of 5 or 6 teams. And right behind that, which is kind of where I would see us. But, you know, other people are looking at it and don't really like the depth. I mean, they think like Mize, Manning, Daz Cameron, and yeah, maybe Isaac Paredes and Jake Rogers. But beyond that, they don't seem to, you know, there's plenty of people who don't seem to see that much there. So
I'm kind of in between the two camps where I think that like the Tigers have definitely beefed things up and have some very interesting prospects. Like I'm still hyped to see what happens with Cody Clemens. And I think there are some very interesting guys in the mix, but I'm also not probably as excited about it as like you or Jay or Kenan, like where you see things in those like, you know, single A, high A guys where I'm just like, I'm bored of those names. Yep. Get back to me when they're in Erie, which is still a step up for me because 2 years ago, I would not have cared who was even in AAA. So, I mean,
I was in the same shape, but it was only because the Tiger system sucked so bad start with. Yeah.
So now it's like, okay, I care somewhat about these prospects. Like, yeah, 2 years ago, Ashley wouldn't have even known what a Cody Clemens is. So, I mean, we're taking a step in the right direction. And I think that part of that is because the Tigers farm system has gotten a lot more interesting. And there are a lot more players to actually pay attention to. But I'm not quite excited about them. So I may be, like, I don't know. I might have probably put them a little higher than Keith, but probably not by much. Yeah. I totally agree with his placement to the Rays farm system, though.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I agree with his placement to the Rays farm system, too. I mean, the Rays farm system is sick. And
disgusting.
And that's kind of it. Like, there's those couple, like, the Rays, the Padres, the White Sox, yeah, the Braves. And, you know, if there's someone else out there that you really like, that's fine. But those four systems are, you know, kind of far and away ahead of everybody else. And I would still just kind of, like, put us right behind. And another problem with this is ranking by number rather than, like, sort of, like, this group, that group, etc. And I don't know if I assume Keith must have some kind of process. The problem with his lists and rankings is that there isn't that much explanation.
Yeah.
And I was giving him some grief, you know, obviously, because, like, you know, the Fangraphs guys, I really like the way they do things. I like the way they kind of articulate every detail of why they have this guy here versus that guy and their whole scouting process. So I'm a little bit bigger fan of those guys. But one thing I would say to people is that Keith Law does not have it in for the Tigers. Like,
Keith Law doesn't have it in for any team. I think that's a huge thing.
Or Keith Law has it in for every team, is another way.
He either hates them all or he just does not care. And I think that's a really weird thing, is that everyone is convinced that Keith Law hates their team.
Yeah.
Keith Law does not care about your team. Keith Law is making his lists and he's talking about baseball and he's going to go watch some Oscar movies. And that's Keith Law's life.
Exactly. And I'm like, you know, like MLB Pipeline and stuff, like, you know, Keith Law is independent. He's been doing this a really long time. He kind of got into this, like, sort of ahead of the whole, like, prospect scouting industry that's grown up over the last 10 or 15 years, you know, whereas it used to just kind of be Baseball America and Baseball Prospectus and whatever they said, you know, people kind of took it as gospel. You know, Keith got in there pretty early and he's, you know, he can do what he wants over there. And he talks to a lot of people, so it's worth paying attention. Just, you know, people just need to not fly off the handle too much.
Yeah.
Like, the players are what they are. And, you know, by the end of this season, we'll have a lot better idea where things stand. So in the meantime, don't be mean to Keith Law, because even though I think his ranking here was pretty bad, like pretty far from reality, I really like Keith Law, and Keith Law and I have, you know, many, many tastes in terms of music and books in common. And he generally seems like a cool guy. So I'll leave it there.
Very good.
Yeah, this is just kind of that time of year where, especially for a team that's rebuilding, all there is to talk about is the farm system, and it can be infuriating because we just keep saying the same things and going over the same territory. Like Cody, who works for us on the site, was giving me some grief the other day just because, like, I was just, like, you know, given the shortest answers to all these things, and he's like, well, you got to think, but this and this. And I was like, dude, I've written all that like 1,000 times this offseason. I can't break down every point every time again. You're just gonna have to trust me, you know, follow me along a little bit.
Just don't care anymore.
I know, I can't do it.
The winter is long.
I need to see the baseball. Yeah. Okay. And then we talked a little bit about how free agency is going awry. And one of the solutions that's been proposed by a lot of people is just that players should probably just be getting paid younger, because they're getting drastically underpaid with the expectation that, well, you'll make all that up in free agency. And now that owners and teams have decided, no, you're not going to make all that up necessarily in free agency, maybe the best thing to do is make it 5 years of control, or you go to arbitration earlier.
Well, and along those lines,
Carlos Correa and Tommy Pham both won their arbitration hearings today, came out ahead.
Tommy Pham's reaction is the best thing I've seen on Twitter all day. Well, it was the best thing I saw on Twitter up until I saw the reaction of Nancy Pelosi applauding Donald Trump at the State of the Union.
Oh, no. Yeah, so we are good. Recording this as the State of the as Union the State goes of the Union on.
Is happening.
But thank God. They're going to avoid this.
Up to that point, the best thing I saw on Twitter all day was Tommy Pham immediately after leaving his arbitration hearing posting a screen cap of the song Got Paid with a little like prayer hands.
Yeah, I know. It is like, kind of funny that they came out and like you would announce that. It's like, hey everybody, I got my $5 million.
So good.
Yep. Carlos Correa's was more boring. He just gave thanks to God for getting him lots of money. Because God loves Carlos Correa more than he loves us.
Well, obviously. I mean, the natural gifts, the beautiful fiance, the World Series ring, the...
He does have a beautiful fiance, I must
say. He's not having a hard life. I mean, I can't say that. He might have had a very difficult life prior to this. Yeah. I'm not, close with Carlos Correa. But he seems to be doing very well for himself now.
Life seems to be going quite well. Yeah. Maybe not Justin Verlander well, but, no one else can have that much. I mean, that's just too much for most people. The other part of that was that Nolan Arenado set the record for a arbitration eligible player by getting $26 million out of the Colorado Rockies, breaking by $3 million the previous record held by Josh Donaldson with the Blue Jays.
Oof.
So maybe those things are all kind of a little bit of indicators that the arbitrators and the people who make those estimates are starting to realize that like this is where things kind of have to start to give for things to be rough. Kind of, at the back end of guys' contracts. We had some fun today talking about our esteemed colleague, Bob Nightingale, who was on Twitter raving about Adam Jones and how he's still an elite player. We were just all like,
He's not bad. He was really good at the World Baseball Classic.
And I love Adam Jones. Like, great dude, absolutely, a guy who's done a lot for kind of the city of Baltimore and is sort of an institution there.
Yeah.
Was a really good player for a long time, but he's basically Curtis Granderson now. Like, a guy who part-time is sort of like your player coach type 25th man might be a good dude to have around. I wouldn't be opposed to the Tigers adding Adam Jones as the 25th guy.
He's what, 33 now?
Yeah, I think 32 or 3. Yeah. Hasn't really been good in a couple seasons, but would just kind of be that dude to play corner outfield part-time and, kind of mentor Jacoby Jones, Daz Cameron,
Chris and Stewart. Yeah, I think that'd be fun.
Yeah.
Yep, Tigers, are you listening? Let's do this. Go go sign me a catcher and go sign Adam Jones.
I know. See how you've broken us down, Tigers, to the point that we're just like, hey, spend $500,000 on this one guy, would you? It'll be fun. At least help us out here a little bit.
Give me some joy. Give me some fun baseball.
Yep.
I miss fun baseball.
And on that subject, like, what weird are you going to look for fun baseball from the Tigers this year?
Oh, Jacoby Jones.
Yeah.
Jacoby is, I think, a pretty good point to look at. I want to see fun from Mikey Matuk this year.
Yeah.
I feel like he's got fun in him. I think Nick might be a lot of fun, especially if he's trying to audition for, his free agency.
Yep.
I think Nick's going to have a really hot year at the plate.
I do too, actually.
Going to be comical in the field, but I think he'll be fun at the plate.
I think he'll be better. I'll say he'll be better in the field. Maybe not a lot, but better.
I think somewhat. I would agree. I think you can't continue in the same role for that long and not improve at least a little bit. I'm not expecting leaps and bounds, either literally or figuratively. But I think he will be better, and I think he's going to be super fun at the plate. I think Miggy's going to be fun, at least for the beginning of the season, until he gets hurt. Knock wood. I'm actually knocking.
I like the lineup at the top of the order, as long as everybody's healthy, however long that lasts.
Yeah, but there's going to be injuries.
Jamer Candelario, Kristen Stewart, Nick, Goodrum, Miggy, like, that's not bad. That's not bad at all for five guys. The other four, not so good.
Some dingers. It could be entertaining. I think out in the field-wise, Jones is going to be a lot of fun. Fingers crossed that Matuk has a good season, because, I don't even care production-wise, but he can be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
He's one of those...
He's good. Yeah.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that kind of catches you. I love... you know, the dugout interactions with him and Fulmer. And I love that level of thing. So give me fun dugout goofiness. Give me, you know, give me this season's suit and tie. Give me something like cute. I mean, we're not going to put on our playoff goggles, but like, let's do something.
Yeah. Can we get some Rally Goose type content at least out of this? Like some fun.
Do you remember how fun baseball was with Rally Goose?
Yeah. And the Tigers were playing good. Like it was like a month where that whole thing was pretty fun. And yeah, you know, Mikey Mantuk, like, I think, is he 29 now? Like, it's kind of got to happen. Like, if he's going to be around, you know, for much longer. And the dude still has the athleticism to play a good outfield. He's still got power.
He's 29.
That bat just disappears sometimes, and it's freaking weird. It's just weird.
Like, and I know they worked on it when he got...
If you got good Mikey Mantuk, like, all the time, he'd be a really solid player.
Yeah, they did work on it when he was demoted to AAA last year, so I'm hoping to see that some of that might have stuck. But I don't know. We'll see. I think with any bad team, you can always expect that there's going to be some entertainment there. Like, even when the Rays got off to a shitty start at the beginning of last season, watching Malik Smith was just a delight. Like,
oh, yeah.
Just a goofy, fun on-field presence. And I think the Tigers have a lot of opportunity for that. I think you've got these guys that are young enough that have a little something to prove, even if the team itself isn't winning. And I think there's definitely going to be some stories to watch there.
Yeah, and beyond, like, say, like, Miggy and Zimmerman, like, we're kind of onto a whole new generation of player. And, you know, we should kind of see some of those guys starting to kind of forge their own identity, I would think. And, you know, we're not going to get, like, the top prospects so much this year until maybe later. But there are some interesting players who were at the AAA level last year or AA level who will come in and kind of help out. And then you've got, you know, year two of at least full season of Jamer. You've got Kristen Stewart. Like, there's a bit of a youth movement coming. I don't know if Grayson Griner ever really works out as a starting catcher, but... Yeah, there's some stuff like that to kind of look forward to. And I actually think, like, the starting pitching staff and the bullpen could surprise a lot of people and actually be pretty good. I wouldn't go betting on it because so much depends on injury. But, you know, seeing Joe Jimenez hopefully take another little step forward, you know, seeing what Shane Green has to offer this year, there's a couple good guys there, and there's a whole bunch of interesting arms. There's Drew Verhagen, Victor Alcantara, Sandy Baez. There's a lot of interesting guys out there, and we still have the glories of Blaine Hardy, hopefully, to look forward to.
Yeah.
So you could piece together a pretty solid bullpen, I think, out of that. And then, you know, maybe we'll get lucky. Maybe Daniel Norris and Michael Fulmer stay healthy this year, and the rotation surprises people and is actually, like, you know, actually kind of good. Not great, but kind of good.
Kind of good. I'm all here for kind of good. I would totally be fine with kind of good.
Yeah, could someone just break out? Like, if we just had one player, like, have a big-time breakout season, too, that would really help. Like, Leonis Martin didn't exactly have a huge breakout last year, but seeing him, like, play the best baseball of his career for 3 or 4 months was really fun. Same thing with Alex Avila the year before. It was sort of like, oh, just give me that juice. I just need that juice for a while.
Just something fun.
Yep, a little more fun would be good. You know, this isn't so much fun, but, you know, this just struck my, just reminded me of this for some reason, but the Texas Rangers have gone to synthetic turf for this season.
I heard about that.
I just wanted to mention that, because I was just sort of like, oh, that's kind of crazy. But then our buddy Lizzie Strom, who was kind of like, oh, that's actually a really good thing, because, as it turns out, synthetic turf is actually much better for the environment, which you wouldn't think at first blush, but because they don't have to water it in Texas and all that, I guess overall it's a net gain. And it also is like an interesting turf because it's longer. It's sort of it looks more grassy. So I'm kind of curious on that score, just to kind of see how that works out. Actually, that was like a total non sequitur, but I was just like, it just struck me. I saw a note about that in my email and was just like, yeah, Texas synthetic turf. Not the two things I would have thought would go together.
Can I have, speaking of Texas, I have a confession to make that's going to make a lot of general sports fans really judge me.
Oh, no.
I did not know.
Is this about Tony Romo?
No, it is not. It is about the fact that until probably 2 months ago, I did not realize that the Houston Texans were an actual team. Like, I honest to God thought that there was one football team in Texas and that it was the Dallas Cowboys and that was it. If you had told me that the Houston Texans were a thing, I would have been like, that's funny. You made that up for a movie. That's not real. And which is super funny because I follow JJ Watt on Twitter. I think he's a cool dude. I know he plays football. It is a thing I understand. And yet it did not connect that he played for the actual Houston Texans. This is like a deep shame for me that I've only just recently realized Houston Texans are a real thing.
No, don't worry about football. Football will just make you sad.
Oh God, if challenged to like $1 million, like if somebody told me they would pay me $1 million to name every football team, I could not do it. I can tell you that right now.
Oh, so what does Canada do like Sunday night?
Well, we have the CFL.
You just went out with your went out with your lives like this isn't that interesting. Yeah.
I could probably name all the CFL teams, but nobody cares about the CFL.
No, I don't even really care about the NFL that much.
No. So that's the thing, right? Like I could probably name half of the minor league franchises for baseball, but like naming all of the actual football or like basketball teams out there, I could not do it to save my life.
I could do it, but yeah, it might take me a little bit. Yeah. All right. We're kind of getting toward the end. There was one thing I wanted to note for people is this is just a really cool project that Rob Friedman, who is our boy, the pitching ninja, you can find him at Pitching Ninja on Twitter. But he started this this program kind of called Flat Ground, and it's an account on Twitter where young pitchers, unsigned, you know, hopeful kind of former pros or amateurs can all kind of send video of themselves throwing in a cage or wherever off a mound and get feedback from coaches. We've also seen like MLB players like drop in there. I mean, it's like the kind of place where you'd see like a Mike Clevenger or a Trevor Bauer stop in to give someone a bit of advice and all those sorts of things. But it's actually just really blown up. And it's just such a cool idea because maybe I'm a little bit sensitive about this, but when I was growing up and trying to figure out how to be a pitcher, there was just no instruction or information available. Like this was still like the 80s when they were telling us like, no, don't lift weights, don't work out, like don't do any of these things. So I'm sensitive to the idea of a site like this that kind of democratizes that kind of information and that access to coaching. And that's kind of what they've done there. And it's just been really, really a cool account to follow. And we've actually seen like teams kind of following those accounts and picking up some of these guys on minor league free agent deals. My buddy RJ Anderson over at CBS Sports wrote a piece about Chris Nunn, who the Texas Rangers picked up last week. And he's a guy who had kind of washed out of baseball a couple years ago as a left-hander who'd kind of had some injury issues and stuff. And he posted a gif of himself throwing 99 miles per hour as a left-hander.
Jesus.
And and that thing just got retweeted everywhere. Like, how is this guy not pitching somewhere? You know, people freaking out. And so he got signed pretty quickly, and RJ has that story over there. That's worth looking up, but it goes all the way down to seeing like little, like 8, 9, 10-year-old little leaguers, throwing and getting kind of like basic coaching advice and stuff, for their, you know, sent to their parents and stuff. So that's a cool thing. If you're involved in youth baseball at all, or, you know, kind of at any level, we've seen college coaches on there recruit players from it. It's a good thing to know about and a pretty cool site to follow just for all the fun content, apart from just the occasional, like, holy shit, who is that guy moment that you have, like Chris Nunn provided for all of us. So
no, that's awesome.
Check that out. Yeah, the Flat Ground app. We love Rob Friedman here. I have my pink Pitching Ninja. Well, I guess it's red, but it's kind of pinkish. Pitching Ninja shirt I finally got in the mail, so I'm pretty stoked about that.
Oh, man, I don't have a Pitching Ninja shirt.
Ugh. Yeah, Rob would probably give you one. Like, you could probably get free swag. I had to buy mine, but... Yeah, but we love Rob. He's a good man. And then, finally, the last thing I wanted to talk about was really just to give, like, a shout-out to my friend Lynn Henning, who is retiring after over 40 years at the Detroit News. He basically retired at the beginning of this month. You know, Lynn's, like, covered every sport. He's covered, you know, things from, like, fishing to cross-country racing to, you know, baseball, basketball, and everything in between. There was really a great retrospective he wrote for the Detroit News as he was leaving and kind of told a whole bunch of stories from his career. There's a really for Tigers fans in particular, there's a pretty cool and interesting story about him, this run-in that he sort of had with Maglio Ordóñez and Carlos Guillén in a hotel bar maybe about a decade ago that was pretty interesting and kind of, you know, just kind of enlightening on what it's like to be like a beat writer and kind of in that zone where, you know, you actually have like these high powered athletes get really, really mad at you. And you have to like always be in that space, like balancing, you know, wanting, you know, needing to tell the truth to the fans and bring the, you know, the proper perspective to the fans, but also, you know, to try to appreciate like what's going on in those guys' personal lives and try to balance all those things. But beyond that, there was just a host of good stories out there. And Lynn Henning has been a pretty good friend to me. You know, we started kind of chatting, you know, just texting and stuff a couple years ago, and had a lot of great conversations with him. He's just one of the more gracious, like intelligent, like widely read, super knowledgeable cats I've ever come across. And I've always kind of loved his writing. He's such a good writer. Yep, he really is. He's kind of that last of that old breed that would get a little bit purple and kind of just run with it.
Kind of like the Roger Angel vibe to his work, which I remind everyone, Roger Angel, well, almost 98, I believe, still alive, still writing about baseball.
Yeah, I know. That's awesome. That's awesome. That's a guy we should try to get on here. I don't know.
Holy shit. Do you think Roger Angel would be on our podcast?
I don't know. I'm not sure if Roger Angel has Skype. Probably not. I'm going to guess not, but you never know. I don't want to judge. But yeah, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, Lynn's not of that vintage, but just kind of seeing like, you know, we're just in such a weird place where you're not going to see guys like write for a newspaper for 20, 30 years and kind of be able to kind of carry the whole history of a regional, you know, sports market in their head the way Lynn has. And, you know, we've seen Tom Gage, Joe Falls, like kind of all those classic columnists retire. And in Joe Falls' case, pass away. And, you know, Lynn's got many more years, good years ahead of him. I know he's got plans to write at least one book that he's kind of thought about. And a bunch of other things. And you never know, like, maybe he'll just get bored this spring and be like, out of hell with it. You know, have the Athletic send me to spring training at least. And I hope that stuff comes to him, because he really is kind of a professor emeritus of sports journalism. And so, yeah, I just want to tell him I love him. And yeah, thanks for all the good work and the good advice over the years.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. All the best to him, because he's really, you're really going to be missed, I think, in a lot of ways. Like, whether you loved or hated his philosophies on things, Henning was a tremendous writer.
Yep. Absolutely. And yeah, you know. There's always, you're just always in that spot where, you know, half the fan base hates your guts and calls you a homer, and the other half is like, you know, you're the man, and, you know, everything you say is gospel, and when you're wrong, then they freak out. So, yep, it's a tough spot, and yeah, he's handled it with more grace than most, so, yep, love him. I think that's about it, though. I don't really think we have too much else. Yeah. I was kind of going to bring up Rob's article about the Rob Manfred proposed rule changes, but we'll probably save that.
Rob on Rob. Yeah, we'll talk about that next week. I think it's fair.
All right. Okay. I hope you have a good week. I hope work is better.
I sincerely hope nobody makes me cry this week. That would be great.
They better not. I'll come up there. Just threaten them with that. Brandon will come up here.
Oh, somebody from Michigan come and beat you up. Oh, yeah, that'll be fine. No, it's all right. It'll be fine. Plus side, I ordered my camera for my YouTube channel yesterday. Sweet. So I'm pretty excited to start recording that. You can still donate to that, by the way, until the end of this month. It is go get funding, help me start my YouTube. Yeah, just go to my Twitter or reply to this podcast and I'll give you the link. It is my pinned tweet on Twitter. I'm not going to hit my goal, but the fact of the matter is everything that's been donated so far has gone directly to pay for this camera, which has been a huge, huge help. And I have all my lighting and my mic and my software, so I really am good to go. A buddy of mine is gonna maybe do some intro music for me, and I think all the last thing I have to pay for is maybe some title cards, so I'm pretty hyped. I'm pretty excited to get started.
Yep, I'm pretty excited to see what you do with it. Yep. And yeah, like, you have everything, but some of this you had to finance out of your own pocket, so if you can help, please visit Ashley's Twitter at 90 feet from home. And you can find the link to donate a little bit to the cause there, and we will see some awesome like YouTube baseball explaining content coming before too long.
Hopefully starting in March at this point is my goal. So I'm really hoping to get that started. It'll just be a matter of I have to record kind of a couple episodes at a time and then figure out how to edit them. You think the wedding photographer of 10 plus years would know editing, but Adobe Elements is a whole different beast than Photoshop, my friends.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, pictures is one thing. Videos. Yeah. A little trickier. Yeah.
I'll get all it. Right.
Yep, and if you're a fan and supporter of BlessYourBoys.com and would like to help us out with a little bit of a financial contribution, please head over to our Patreon page at patreon.com/BlessYourBoys. You can sign up to donate in monthly increments or a one-time donation, whatever you'd like to do, and anything that you can help us out with financially over there would be great. And so I'll just throw that to you all, and we will see you next week, and I guess that's about it.
Next week, when pitchers and catchers report.
Please. Oh, finally. Finally real baseball. I'm a superstar. All right. Woo. All right. Everybody have a good night. And we'll talk to you next week. Night, Ashley.
Bye.
Bye-bye.